Let's talk about Sportslit and a book that you've chatted with us about a couple of times, but we're going to get into the nuts and bolts of it today about one of the most legendary and perhaps even apocryphal moments in the history of sport.
Yeah, and next week we'll definitely go over whether it's apocryphal or not. And, you know, from the video that is still available, from certain accounts and stuff, it's debatable whether Ruth called his shot in Game 3 of the World Series. I don't think it's anything debatable that in 1935 he called on his last home run that he would hit it over the roof at Forbes Field. I think that probably is true. So, you know, maybe Ruth was just trying to capitalize on it one way or the other. But what this author did is he set the 1932 season up by beginning with 1918. And the reason he did that, at first I didn't see where he was going, but it's brilliant. Because in 1918, Babe Ruth becomes a very important fixture in baseball as a left-handed blazing pitcher for the Boston Red Sox, who in a shortened season win the World Series over the Cubs. Now, that introduced the world, if you will, to Ruth. And between 1920 and 1932, and I'll tell you in a minute while I chose those numbers, only 9 of the 16 teams in baseball made it to the World Series. The Brooklyn Robins, who become the Dodgers, made it once. The Pirates twice, the Cardinals 4 times, the New York Giants 4 times, Cleveland once, the Cubs twice, the Senators twice, the Philadelphia Athletics 3, and the Yankees 6 times. The Yankees won 4 and 2. They didn't win them all. Why does that make any difference? Well, because if you go forward to 1970, who are the dominant teams? The Yankees have by that time been in 40 World Series, the Cardinals in 19, the Red Sox in 13, and the Red Sox, which I would not have known this, I should have the best winning percentage of all time in the World Series for teams that have been more than 10 times. Their 9-4 record makes them 692. The A's are in 14, the Giants 20, the Dodgers, who are newcomer, in 20, and the Cubs total by 1970 are 11 World Series appearances. So the teams that were dominant in that era of baseball were, until the 1970s, still the dominant teams. So the traditions that were built in those cities had a lot to do with what will culminate in 1932 with one of the most interesting World Series of all time. Because in the 1932 World Series, in the 1932 year, we have the following things happening in our country. Roosevelt is going to defeat Hoover that November in the presidential election. There are 20,000 World War I veterans camped or squatting in Washington in hopes of getting their war bonuses that they had been promised to get them early because they're starving. We have Al Capone and Dillinger and all these people giving the places like Chicago this sort of Wild West feeling. And we have some people that will go to this game, to the third game where in 1932, where Ruth hits the home run, that will go on to be very important people that will remember it differently. John Paul Stevens, the Supreme Court Justice,
felt
that Ruth had called the shot. Bernard Malamud would use an event from the 1932 season as the backdrop for The Natural, and I'll get to that story in just a minute. And Bill Veeck Sr. had just taken over for Wrigley, who had died in December of 1932 as the main guy at the Cubs, as the general manager of the Cubs. And he would do something in August that nobody thought would happen. He fired Rogers Hornsby. Now, Hornsby was arguably, along with Cobb and Ruth, the biggest stars of that era. Though in 1932, the Philadelphia A's don't win the pennant for the first time in 4 years, and Jimmy Fox hits 58 home runs. But what happens is Kennesaw Mountain Landis has to investigate Hornsby because he's been borrowing money from all of his players and friends. He's constantly in debt. He's an inveterate gambler, rumored to be a womanizer, and nobody likes him. There's like nobody on the planet that likes Rogers Hornsby, or at least no one in the locker room. He's not a very nice guy. He replaces him with a guy named Charlie Grimm, who will go on to lead the Cubs to the World Series. Okay, how much of a pennant race was it? On August 15th, there were seven teams in the National League that were less than six games out of first place.
Wow.
And the last couple of weeks, the Pirates and the Cubs, both who had murderous schedules for different reasons, went back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. The Cubs finally win. Of course, they lose to the Yankees in four. But the season has all these things that happen along the way. And this must be remembered that the 18 World Series was not played at Wrigley Field. It was played at Comiskey Park because it could hold more people. So this is going to be Ruth is only going to be in Wrigley Field twice in his life in these two games. Now, there are more than half a dozen players on both the Cubs and the Yankees that will end up in the Hall of Fame. And there are some that the Veterans Committee, I think, over time may look back and put in too, because those are two powerhouse teams. But when they get down to the World Series, one of the things that happens to the Cubs along the way is Billy Gergis, their shortstop, is shot. His girlfriend, who he broke up with, Violet Popovich, who had briefly been married to a heavyweight fighter whose career was going great until he ran into Joe Louis. She was like 19. He was from Duluth, Minnesota. Valley was his name, the fighter. Moves her to a farm in North Dakota. She says, I don't like this. She moves to Chicago and becomes essentially a baseball groupie, dating, among others, Leo DeRocher, Al Lopez. And she falls in love with Billy Gergis, who was from New York, a kid from the Bronx, played at one point, I believe, with the Red Sox. And he wants to break it off because he's been told by people, look, you know, she's got a reputation, blah, blah, blah. So she writes a suicide note and plans to go to the hotel. She gets a room in the same hotel where Gergis lives and goes to see him. If he still wants to break up, she's written this note that she's going to kill him and herself. Well, she puts the gun to her head and he tries to wrestle away, and he ends up getting shot three times. And 3 weeks later, he's back playing baseball. And all the charges against Violet are dropped because he thought he was just saving her from trying to kill herself. He doesn't even know at the time suicide note. So she's described as a young, divorced, comely brunette. In the middle of the season, there are all these distractions. There are fights between umpires and players. And the White Sox, their entire team beats up one of the umps. It was a topsy-turvy. A lot of the players got in fights. Ty Cobb, allegedly, according to this writer, which contradicts something that you and I have read before, said that he constantly used the N-word at Babe Ruth. That was the way they taunted Ruth. They told him that he wasn't fully Caucasian, and so the era of the buildup for 32. Is huge. The letdown for the Cubs is the Yankees just beat them in four straight. And Ruth hits that home run, which we'll talk about in greater detail and what goes in the game when we talk about the book next week. Just some of the people that appear in this book this is the Cubs lineup. Kai Kiler, Gabby Hartnett, Billy Herman, Burley Grimes, Rogers Hornsby as a player coach for a while, Woody English, Charlie Grimm, Rick Stevenson, Stan Hack, Billy Gergis, and the pitching staff of Guy Bush, Charlie Root, Pat Malone, and Lon Warnke. Charlie Root will be the one that gives up the home run to Ruth, and Bush will be the one who was known for just constantly haranguing Ruth. People were throwing lemons and oranges at him when he was on the field. The Yankees only had Babe Ruth, Luke Gehrig, Tony Lazzari, Joe Sewell. Now, you might know this, Rich. What is Joel Sewell famous for as doing something that no one else in baseball was able to do?
Oh, gosh. Joe Sewell. He wasn't the guy that caught the ball dropped off the Washington Monument, was he?
He might have been, but that's not what I have him here.
Okay. That was Gabby Street.
The hardest man to strike out in the history of baseball.
Okay.
8,000 plate appearances, he struck out 114 times.
Wow.
Reggie Jackson could do that in the month of August. and the Yankees also had, just to sort of add to their team, Bill Dickey, Earl Coombs, Lefty Gomez, Red Ruffing, Herb Pennock, Joe McCarthy was a manager, Eddie Barrow, who had been the Red Sox manager in the past, was the head of their operations. And the people to make their big league appearances that year of importance were Dizzy Dean, Jimmy Fox, Monty Weaver, Walter Big Train Johnson, Connie Mack, and of course the legendary John McGraw had a lot to do in that. And it goes on, the number of people that the book revolves around. And so we'll set up that game three, where we have Ruth's called or not called shot when we finish talking about this next time.
Excellent. Well, I'm looking forward to it. It's a fascinating story. And I think, and you alluded to it by mentioning some of the great names, to me, that's one of the most interesting periods, not just in baseball history, but in the history of American sports.
I would absolutely agree. And I think that really from about 27 through maybe 37, that is the transition era into the modern game. Where players start to get bigger, faster, stronger. There's more of the sort of pre-metrics kind of strategy and things that might not have been around before. And that 32, I'd say that the author's position that the 32 Yankees is the best team other than the 27 Yankees in the history of the Yankees and maybe in history of baseball is probably pretty true.
Yeah, and how old was Ruth by that time? Because, again, he was only around for a few more seasons.
Yeah, he was around for three more years. Well, when he broke in 1817, so Ruth was 41 maybe?
No. Couldn't have been that old, was he?
Well, I'm trying to think. He died. I can figure that out.
I was thinking closer to maybe 35, 36. But
until he was 42, his last year with the Braves, that was 1938.
Okay, 30. Gary says he was 37 that year.
So it was 37. That would, yep. Gary, good math. 37. Yep. But he was getting old. Hornsby obviously was getting old. There were a lot of older players. But you know, the thing about Ruth is that's so astonishing is that he really didn't lose his bat until the very end. His knees and his overweight and he wasn't any good in the outfield anymore. But his ability to hit a baseball lasted a long time. I mean, he hit that ball over the roof at Forbes Field. That was 6 years later. He was 43 years old when he did that.
But in his last game, he hit three home runs.
Yes, and that's the game. The last one was the one that went over the top of the roof at Forbes.
Now, there are those who think that the pitcher at the time, Guy Bush, might have grooved a couple, knowing or having a good sense that it was the Bambino's last time around.
Yeah, but Bush hated Ruth. And when he was with the Cubs, he was the biggest taunter. In fact, Bush didn't give up the third home run. He stepped up out of the dugout and tipped his cap to Ruth when he went by.
Nice.
Just sort of like, well, that's pretty amazing. You learn a lot about Babe Ruth that you don't sort of get from the biographies, which go so much into his personal life. But the sense that on the field, the people wanted to play with Babe Ruth. People didn't want to be around Rogers Hornsby. It's like, I had no, well, my only knowledge of Hornsby when I was really young was he was the guy when they put his picture on a baseball card for a tobacco company, he went crazy because I don't smoke. I don't want the youth to know about this. Well, maybe you don't want the youth to know about your fact that you're the second highest paid person in America practically, and you have to borrow money from your players because you're terribly in debt. You've been in car accidents where you haven't paid off your debts. You're a womanizer. Yeah, you know, I just thought he was some kind of straight arrow, but I don't think that's the case.
Interesting. Well, more of that conversation coming up next week here on Sports Lit 101.
Yeah, we'll have fun with this next week, and we'll get Tom Wolf on at some point. And it's Baseball by the Book is the podcast. And if people want to know just how in tune we are with sports books, go and look at their 208 episodes and see how many books we talked about before they did.
Really?
And that's Justin McGuire, who's a longtime baseball historian and writer. I was looking and so many of the books, and he gets them from all the presses the same way we do. I looked at his 35 episodes, and he does sometimes really old books that we probably wouldn't do. I think we had 12 of those people on already.
And I would say, if you want to know more about Ruth, too, another great book, and we have the chance to talk with author Jane Levy here. Her wonderful book of The Big Fella, Babe Ruth and the World He Created, which was really focused on Ruth ushering in the era of celebrity.
Yes, and that's another thing that that Wolf talks about in the book, is that ball players at this time are you know, in 1918, when those guys were playing baseball, that was either work or war, right? You needed to be, and they talked about how people were worried about these, and we did it when we talked about the book about From the Dugouts to the Trenches and some of the books about, people were worried that these great celebrities, they're like, you know, Elvis going into the army, that these great celebrities would in some way be endangered. And baseball was the game. I mean, everything else was second place, you know, boxing a little bit behind and horse racing behind that. But baseball was truly the American pastime. And the way Americans gravitated to following these games, especially once radio was available and they could see pictures of people, Ruth became the first great sports celebrity.